Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another reality show hosted by Golden Hawk. Join Golden Hawk as she travels down the rabbit hole exploring many of life's mysteries and adventures. Because here at another reality show, we're not afraid to let our imagination soar and our intuition run wild. So relax, get comfortable, because for the next 2 hours, we're inviting you to open your heart, spread your wings, and fly. And now, here's Golden Hawk.
Hello! Hello, everybody! Welcome to another reality show. I'm your host, Golden Hawk, and I am absolutely delighted that you are here tonight listening live or listening to the archives. There's a lot of places you guys could choose to be, and when you choose to be with me, it definitely touches me deep in my soul. Because the topics and the discussions that I intend to create on my show are definitely universal topics and universal subjects. And, you know, who are we kidding? We are going through massive changes. I mean, we are not just going through little changes. We are going through massive changes. And, we're all going through it together. You know what's interesting? This is what I'm finding so fascinating as of late, that I'm sensing everyone has a piece of this, of the wisdom we need to experience and we need to hear and we need to share. And by us coming together and, you know, creating open forums, places where you can call in, group meetings, such a wonderful resonance is being created where everybody's shining brightly. Synchronistically, it just feels like everyone who shares, even if they feel a little shy or they're not quite sure if what they're saying is, you know, is correct or incorrect, when you kind of just go out and share anyways, and, you know, of course, everything in appropriateness, but when you get together in these groups like this radio show, and you share, everyone benefits. I mean, everybody. So I'm really going to start, when I start doing my show, I'm going to start really encouraging people to call in and share. Because I can almost promise you, your question or your comment or your share will affect someone else. And, you know, when we experience that with a knowingness, That's kind of what the energy and the consciousness right now is creating. It's creating the awareness that we are all interconnected. And so I really want to encourage people. The call-in number is 646-929-2084. I would love to hear from all of you. Yes, every single person on the planet, call in. No, I'm only joking. All right, so this week, okay, this has been a really interesting week for me. I'm coming down to the last couple of weeks. Next week is my last week working with the beautiful Anya and Sahana. And I'm still going to be connected with them. I'm going to still be doing Saturday night work. But, you know, clearly my job is coming to a close. And I have been going through some really interesting feelings, and I want to share them with you because I'm finding it interesting. I recognize that across the board, United States as well as the world, but I definitely sense it in the United States, there is a fear, a fear in consciousness of not being able to support ourselves, and there not being enough, whether it's enough money or enough jobs, enough health care. And I find it interesting from my perspective because, you know, now that my job is ending, which, to be quite honest, I've been a nanny for 20 years. Turnover rate, I'm used to my job coming to an end and finding a new job. I've worked for several families in my tenure of being a nanny. So I don't really have so much of a fear. But I can feel myself that when I just kind of get still for a moment, oh my God, the fear that is happening within me at moments, becomes very clear to me that it's mass consciousness. I mean, I am experiencing what mass consciousness is experiencing. And then, of course, I'm totally grateful because of the work that I've done, the inner work that I've done, I know that it's not mine. And so I want to, you know, definitely encourage people to recognize that we're going to be feeling a lot of things, a lot of the whole broad spectrum of emotions. And it's not necessarily ours, especially if we have been consciously doing the work. And you know what the work is. The work is essentially releasing the illusions of doubt, releasing the illusions of fear, you know, understanding life that we're the creators. We're, you know, everything we see outside of us is really created within us. And, you know, what I would call at this point basic spirituality 101. And so what I'm also starting to recognize is that by allowing myself to feel the fear but not respond to it, I'm helping to alchemize that energy for the entire planet. And, you know, it actually, I know this is going to sound like an oxymoron, but it actually feels good to be afraid knowing I'm alchemizing it. You know, I know. Goldie's, you know, I'm a twisted sister a little bit, and I'm not a masochist by any stretch. I'm just a person who's aware, clearly, of what's happening within me, and in that clarity, I'm not afraid of it, and I'm not running from it, and I really encourage all of you, do the work, and the work can be as simple as being still, breathing deeply, and just allowing the stuff that's coming up, let it come up. Don't resist it. Don't run away. Don't defend it. It's okay to take some time to yourself. Because the way what I call it is, you know, when I'm puking on myself, which is essentially when the subconscious stuff is coming up and I need to feel it, because in order for it to be released, it's got to be felt. So when the unconscious stuff is coming up, you know, I'm probably not going to go to, you know, a friend's party, you know, and hang out because, you know, I'm agitated, I'm ornery, I'm uncomfortable, I'm puking on myself. Nobody wants to be around anybody who's puking on themselves. But after these episodes happen, I am clear, I'm light, you know, I feel fantastic. And it happens, it seems like in waves, you know, it'll come up to be felt. And for me, at this point, I mean, I've been at this releasing for like 16 years. I can actually do this within a couple of hours at this point. But I mean, it used to be my basic time frame was that it would happen overnight. I know, like early evening, it's going to be a rough night because I could just feel anxiety. You just feel all those things that make you anxious and uncomfortable. So I would, you know, I would start preparing myself, whether I was going to put certain music on. You know, I always have my cat, and for me, petting her is just an outstanding experience. All of these things, we know the tools. They're all on Facebook. You know, there's plenty of radio shows. But really, you know, recognize that it's part of the journey right now is to feel these feelings. And it really, it helps tremendously not to attach our stories or our judgments for feeling this way. It's part of the human experience. It's part of our journey. And we're all going through it. I promise you, the most beautiful, the most wealthy, the most royal people on the planet, as well as, you know, everybody else on the other end of that spectrum, everyone's feeling right now. So that's my share for tonight. And we're going to be going into more of this, because my guest tonight wrote a fabulous book called The Love Parent, How to Be the Parent You Hope to Be. Now, this is a book, actually, I'm going to read what she wrote about it because I really enjoyed it. Love Parent has a wonderful message. Whether you hope to parent your children wisely or parent yourself wisely, it is about creating joyful experiences, building a relationship that stands the test of time, and releasing when independence is timely. If all participants are loved and accepted for who they are, everyone's needs are met. I mean, I think that's a brilliant write-up. I'm excited that she's returned to our show again. So please help me welcome Betsy Thompson to the show. Welcome to the show, Betsy.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me, Goldie. I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, I am delighted to have you. You speak my words, sister.
Okay.
So, Love Parent, you know, this is a deep book, and you know, when anyone, I would imagine, anytime you write a book this deep, it's coming from, you know, I think you even mentioned it on your site, that a healing experience as you were writing it.
Yeah, well, this was the first book I wrote in 1991, and right after I acknowledged the fact that I had this gift of being able to talk to spirit, and I was talking with a very good friend of mine, and she was having some parenting issues, and I had some parenting issues too, because I had a child with special needs in the day before they had a term for it, and I had some questions too, and so I asked spirit if we could write a book about parenting and how to be the parent you hope to be, and this is what resulted. And I had no idea what would come, and I was surprised by some of the chapters, as much as maybe the reader is, but it turned out to be a wonderful book as far as, you know, helping me, and so I hope it helps other people too.
Nice. I think anything that helps heal ourselves heals the whole. I don't think it can be any other way. That's just my humble opinion.
Right. We're all here together, learning together. And,
exactly. Exactly.
That's true, too. So I just started asking the questions, and the chapters came, and that's how the book formed, and it comes from a different point of view from other parenting books, in that it's from spirit's point of view, and what the new birthing energy is looking for once it gets here. And not that it doesn't go through all the ideas that we all face when we're raising children, like allowance and chores and ridicule from others and homework and all those things, but it also always comes from the point of view of the spiritual aspect of what is really going on behind the scenes.
Right. Would you like to take a glass of water or something?
No, I am. I'm getting over one of those coughing bugs that I've had it for months, and just every once in a while when I start talking, it comes up again. So just I'll try to...
No, you're not bothering me, not at all. Listen, but if at any point in time you need to put the phone down to get a glass of water, if you need to, that's fine. I just wanted you to know that.
I have it right here beside me.
It's all good.
Yeah.
Okay, so I love it. So, you know, essentially what you've done is you've written the book from the point of view from what I would almost call behind the scenes.
Right. Well, it's really, I feel like I'm just a vehicle, and I'm waiting for the ideas to come through me, because I don't know what's going to come until it's come. I don't know what's going to happen, what the answer is going to be. Sometimes even the subject, I don't know what it's going to be until it comes, and then I have it, and then we go forth from there. So I just sort of open my heart and let it flow.
Okay. Okay. Well, I mean, I have the book. I have it up, and I'm wondering, I mean, because there's some fascinating chapters. So if you're okay with it, I would love to kind of go through some chapters, if that would be all right.
Wonderful.
Outstanding. Okay, so now the way I see the book, and just so you know, everyone, the book will definitely share where you can get the book. The book is now only on ebook. Is that correct?
It's on
only available on
Kindle and Amazon, but you can also go to my website at www.betsythompson.com, and you can get it through PayPal.
Oh, nice. So they could literally go right now and download it instantly.
Yes, they could.
Outstanding. Okay. So I'm looking at the thing, and she has, you know, the chapters are on one side, which, and she has like conception, the new idea, genes, first communication. But what's really kind of nice is the conception. You're like you put in the italics the beginning of an idea. So, when I read the book, I got the sense, and I did not read the whole book. I want to be honest about that. I have. My life is, it used to be, I would absolutely read every single book any guest came on, and life is shifting me, and that's just no longer my truth, but I can, you know, I've read chapters of the book, and I really adore the way you write, which of course makes sense, because I adore anything that's from the spiritual point of view. I mean, my friends and me, or last week we had a show where we called it being vertical. Instead of being horizontal, it's about understanding the vertical. Now, the italic part feels like it's the spiritual, in other words, it's the macrocosm, the bigger picture of what the concept of what the left-hand side is of the chapters. Would that be accurate?
I don't know how to analyze that. I just know that it's always from it takes a journey of spirit from the minute that spirit gets the idea that it wants to know itself in matter with the same understanding it knows itself out of matter. And it longs to live that journey on the plane that is known as Earth. And so it takes the point of view of, you know, why it's coming and what it wants to accomplish while it's here and what it hopes to, you know, do throughout all these different ideas that are in the book. So, I mean, if you see that, then wonderful. It's probably meant to be there, and I just haven't even noticed it.
Right, no, and I get right, and I understand that everybody will perceive, because that's how I was seeing it. Even the italics was like, oh, look, that's spirit talking, and this is how it's showing. But, you know, the way you just said it, I'm recognizing that this book could also help with the birthing of, like, a radio show or the birthing of a concept, you know, for someone wanting to bring an idea into the physical plane.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's true. Yes, it's a conception of an idea. That's true.
Yeah. So, okay, so, well, I know there's a few people on the air, a few people listening to the show that I definitely do want to talk about the idea of the relationship we have with our parents and with ourselves, because that's clearly a universal feels, anyways, like a universal, I don't want to call it an issue because I don't think anything's an issue, but it's kind of on the front burner. It's in many of our lives, whether our, you know, we're older and our parents, you know, we're now taking care of them or, you know, or even if we're younger, you know, just trying to find our own independence from our parents.
Well,
there really seems to be a dynamic that, especially with this, like, explosion of awakening, that there seems to be communication issues with parents and their children.
Well, it's important to remember that the child comes into the life of the parent for the same reason that the parent welcomes the child. They both have something to learn from each other. So it's a deal they make together. I don't think the energy of the child would enter into an idea it wasn't welcome for the growth that it offered itself as well as the parent, and the parent wouldn't welcome a child unless the parent had growth as well as the child. So it's a mutual deal they make, and they probably most of the time have issues that are very similar to each other, and that's why they come together to help each other. So it's
right.
About the idea that when energy is planning its journey into humanness, it comes from a place of complete knowing, believing that itself it's God, believing that its energy is God, because everything that it knows is God. And it comes into the human form to try to remember that while it's here, to try to remember the in form that it's the same energy it knew it was self, knew itself out of form. And so it's trying to remember, I'm sure that before it comes, it asks itself, you know, will I remember what I know now? Will I look within for my truth? Will I take responsibility for my reflections? Will I believe I am still God, even if I hear the lie that I'm not? Will I trust my instincts? Will I listen to the optimistic side of my nature? Will I trust that whatever comes into my life is timely? Will I remember the principle of balance where everything I express, I receive? So that's what that's what the energy is thinking just before it gets here.
Mm. That's beautiful. No, indeed. You know, and I've read actually in some channeled work that says prior to this lifetime, we always came in with these grand, I resonated with it. I don't want to speak for everyone, but I can tell. I feel I came into every lifetime I've ever had with these, you know, grand ideas of shifting and changing, and then I get into the density, and, you know, the only thing that shifted and changed was me, you know, and meaning I became dense.
Yeah,
and
well, the thing
I forgot
is,
to wake up.
it's just a challenge. I mean, and you know, what if it, I don't think that coming into lifetimes is any different than living our day-to-day life while we're here, because you sometimes try something and it doesn't work, and so you try something else. You think you have a project you think will work, but it doesn't work, but it leads you in another direction. And I think that's
right.
exactly what happens with lifetimes. You try something, and maybe it didn't work quite the way you wanted it to, but you try it again from a different angle to see if it works better. And doesn't how many times you try it, who cares if you have eternity and forever in which to try and forever in which to experiment? You're not here. You don't come here to suffer. You come here to learn more about who you truly are, and to enjoy the game of matter, and to enjoy being here, and to enjoy what this game offers. And I believe there's hundreds and maybe thousands of games, maybe even more than that, that we can choose for the growth that we have, or the growth we think is important to us. And so we choose the idea that we think will work the best. So that's why we're all here now together, because we felt, as birthing energy ourselves, that this was the game where we had the best chance of remembering our essence in form the way we remembered it out of form.
Yeah, well, and I also believe we really are the pick of the crop. In other words, we were the strongest ones. We were the clearest ones. We were masters when we were on the other side. You know, and we still are. I shouldn't say it as if it's a, you know, there is no past, present, future when it's non-physical. You know, we are the cream of the crop. That is my, because even with everything in alignment, you know, planets and, you know, we're kind of getting aligned with, you know, my belief system says we're aligned, or it's actually physical, but aligned with Andromeda. So, you know, we're starting to get some looping going back and forth from other galaxies that are clearly, you know, enlightened. Even with all of these elements, you know, we're still 97%, and I'm just rounding, 97% of the population has still not come to an awakening that, you know, that us and the planet are one. You know, or let's even go simpler than that, that the planet's even alive.
Well, I think you have to trust. I mean, I really believe that everyone is, there is no cream of the crop, because everybody's the cream of the crop. And,
I agree. Yes,
so,
I agree. The whole planet is.
Yeah, and we're all here to learn together, or we wouldn't be here together. We all have something in common, or we wouldn't be here together. It's that law of attraction again. We're all here at the same time because we all have something in common, and we all are trying to learn something together. And I think that there's been an enormous shift in consciousness, because I mean, 20 years ago, you couldn't go into Barnes and Noble and buy a New Age book because they didn't know what you were talking about. And now the whole wall in Barnes & Noble that says just New Age. So I think there's been a huge shift, and there's a lot of people who are becoming aware. And every day I think that's happening. And I think that they came here hoping it would happen. And isn't it wonderful that it is happening?
Yeah.
So, and I think the Earth is showing us, and by what's happening to it and what it is doing, that it's rebirthing too. It's rebirthing into whatever it has to rebirth in to stay healthy and to regenerate itself and to stick around for a while so that it can be here for future generations to play in this game. So when I talk about this to other people, I always say that you have to accept this as a wonderful thing, that the Earth is determined to stay healthy and to stay viable for future life. So it's doing what it has to do to rebirth into a healthier state. And we need to
right.
welcome that and go with the flow and not resist it. Because when you resist things, then you have a block up in your aura that doesn't allow for the love of God to come in and help you when you need help. So, and I also want to mention it's a book that is also for people who don't have parents, because it's about self-parenting, and the idea comes down to the idea that whatever is good for the child is good for the adult. So, for instance, if children thrive on being told they're enough, they're lovable, and they're acceptable, adults thrive on being told the same thing. And
right.
if children thrive on being told they can accomplish whatever they came here to accomplish, adults thrive on the same information. And if children thrive on taking responsibility as soon as they're old enough to know the consequences of their actions, then adults thrive on the same principle.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I have seen, you know, from my experience, you know, being with the kids for 20 years, adults, we learn the same way. We learn through repetition. We learn through, you know, having experiences that support what we say, and then the repetition coming back in. I mean, changing changing our ways of being from being third-dimensional beings to multidimensional beings is really a birthing process. You know, it's like we're birthing our God selves into this experience. And so I absolutely agree. And it's so funny because we're always looking to teach the kids where, you know, I go into jobs and go, I surrender, you show me. You know, I'm trying to keep up with your energy because
right. They're
clearly born with, you know, synapses and they think differently. I mean, I know one of my one of the kids I nannied when I first met her, she was 7 and now she's 19, and it's really fascinating to watch her, you know, become a young woman and get her life together and see how she contemplates and experiences her life in the world, because when I was a 19, I was a mess, and she's just, it's not that she doesn't have troubles, but her whole conceptual perception is so different than mine. I mean, than I was at 19. I have much more in common with my 19-year-old friends than I do with many of my, that's not true. I'm basically surrounded by all spiritual people.
Yeah.
But I, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's like the gap is becoming like, well, I got to keep up with you, because they seem to have a definite, their blueprint seems more fully the divine blueprint, where I'm intending, working, breathing, and getting my divine blueprint.
Well, so you came in the idea that you thought would work for you, and it's worked. So, and that's the bottom line, you know. So they came in the idea they thought would work for them, and it's worked. So that's all that really matters. And I think when energy first gets here, when the infant first gets here, that infant is really showing you. When you look in the infant's eyes and you see that.
Yeah.
Love, that infant is showing you who God is, loving you with complete adoration, no opinions about age, height, look, color, nationality, religion. They don't think anything about that. That's how God thinks, too. He just loves you with unconditional love. So I think here's this wonderful gift when this newborn comes to you, showing you just exactly how God loves.
Right on. I'll be honest with you. That's exactly what it is. I mean, for approximately 15 years, all I worked with was infants. You know, I would, from birth to like 2 or 3 years old, and then I'd get another family. Mm-hmm. It's literally, they saturate you with a divine energy. I mean, I would go to work because, you know, who wouldn't go to work when you're, you know, you're plugged into the divinity? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's I absolutely agree with that consensus. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what do we do, you know, when we reach, you know, the other stages of life, like I'll give you a scenario. When after my mom died, it changed the entire dynamics of my family. And my family, we were pretty close-knit in the sense that me and my brother were still very close to home, if not living in the home. And I was 35 when my mom passed. So she dies, and literally we fall apart. Me, my father, my brother. There was a chance within the first year that we would never speak to each other again. Because our dynamics were, she was like the buffer for us. And without her, especially then all of us going through the healing process as well, we all kind of just separate. Like, I left my house for 5 years. Like, the first time ever in my life I didn't live home for that extended amount of time. So, because what I'm finding now with, like, you know, between finances and things shifting, many of my friends are, you know, are either taking care of their parents or going home to their parents because, you know, middle America is kind of collapsing. So how is there any, you know, kind of suggestions you can give to people that are now confronting on some level, meaning it's not their choice, but life is creating that, where they're moving back in with their parents.
Well,
and it's challenging.
Yeah, I think that you you come here knowing exactly what challenges you want, and so you've chosen a family where you know that's going to happen if that's what's happening. It's the challenge
right.
you want to deal with. So it needs to be looked at as a gift for some reason. There are no mistakes ever going on. There's no such thing as luck. It's all about what your energy, your soul, believes you came here to learn or believes will help you to remember who you are. And everything we do and everything that happens in our life is about letting go, releasing, and forgiving, because that's where we find the unconditional love. And God's love is felt. That's what God's love is all about. If we want to, if we want to experience that love, then we have set up the challenges that we think are going to work in terms of finding that love and feeling that love. So it isn't about dreading the situation. It's about welcoming it for whatever it's going to teach you, and not resisting it, but saying, okay, this is what's up for me. So this is what my soul believes in, and I'm going to believe in it too. Because resistance is not productive energy. It's what you're saying when you resist what your soul is bringing you is, my soul is a dummy. And your soul is not a dummy. It's impossible for your soul to be a dummy. Your soul is all-knowing. It has absolutely all the information of every lifetime you've ever lived and everything you've ever done and everything you ever wanted. So it's acting from the wisdom of the ages, and all we have to do is trust that what comes to us is what is up for us in terms of growth, and to accept it and to walk through it.
Right on. Right on. That was beautiful. And, you know, that is it, because the first day I came home after my five-year hiatus, you know, my father looked at me and basically said, you're not welcome here anymore. And I was like, you know, and the first thing out of my mouth was, you think Mom would have felt the same way? And he blew up and went, your mother's dead. I was like, okay, Dad, I get that. And then I went into plan B, and it was like, you know, home or homeless, Dad. I have nowhere to go. I have no money. I got to come home. And the dynamic, like I said, of the family is we had done a lot of our adult years, me and my brother both, living home. You know, it was the nature of the thing, but the nature of our family. But what's so interesting about what you just said, the humility that I have learned by coming home here, that was the piece I needed. I mean, and people don't realize humility, these are concepts and virtues. They don't come, you know, by, you know, I don't even know. They're going to be challenging relationships. That's where humility comes from. When you want to scream at somebody and tell them, you know, not that way, this way, where humility says, I'm just going to breathe in and accept things and become, you know, vulnerable as a spiritual quest, which is exactly like what, you know, in other words, because I was like, I mean, I've spoken to people that have chosen homeless over going home to their parents. And, you know, I'm personally like, I want to deal with that which is emotional, because I seem, for whatever the reason, this lifetime, I am here to work on the emotions. You know, I don't want to call myself an expert, because I don't think anybody can be an expert, but I am clearly aware that is part of the gift that I have in my wiring for what I am. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Well, this is an emotional journey. Everything that you see with your eyes and you hear with your ears and your smell with your nose and taste with your mouth, it's all the illusion. It's all here today, gone tomorrow. It's all matter that disintegrate and not be here. So this is an emotional journey. That's what it's all about. So, everybody's on an emotional journey. When you think about your childhood, what do you remember? You remember the things that affected you emotionally. You lived millions and millions of moments, Goldie, that you don't remember because they didn't impact you emotionally. But the things that did impact you are in your memory, and they're the ones that need to be dealt with, and they're the ones that you remember. And so that's what I believe that – you know, we come into this illusion with our bodies so that we can have the challenge we need to remember the essence of who we are, which is pure, sweet love. And so that's what we are trying to remember. And that's what the newborn is. It comes here to remember. And when it first arrives here, it knows its identity. And then it's then somebody tells it it isn't God and it believes a lie. And some lose that memory, some keep it more than others, but each journey is individual, and each journey is wise for the soul who's living it.
Yeah, Yeah, no, I agree. I do agree wholeheartedly, because I think we all know when we still ourselves, you know, we get still and we get quiet. Because, you know, most people will tell you when they get still and quiet, they're uncomfortable because what they're feeling and experiencing is themselves. That's what the lack of distraction is. The lack of distraction is the experience of self.
Right.
And so my philosophy is if you can't sit still and quiet, then the first thing you should be doing is sitting still and being quiet.
Right.
Anything you can't do from the emotional standpoint is where, you know, people used to say, I don't know where to begin this journey. And I'm like, well, what are you afraid of? Let's start there. Because that's another thing. God has no fear because God knows itself as everything in everything. You know, it's like, there's good fears and there's bad fears. You know, I used to give a lot of room to allow myself to have fear. And the more I'm on this journey, the more I'm recognizing that this can absolutely, you can be a physical human and be fearless. That is not a pipe dream. That can absolutely be an experience. And especially with all the shifting and changing that's going on now. I mean, and I recognize people are like, well, now it seems to be the most fear. And, you know, polarity is the most emphasized. But I say it's only because what's happening is it's coming up to the subconscious is releasing that which was being, whether being denied or, you know, not being looked at. It's coming up to be released, to be experienced, you know, so ultimately we become more light. We hold more light and therefore experience, you know, the soul's aspect, the divine aspect of who we are.
Well, I loved how you were talking about the fear earlier that you felt and the fact that you were dealing with it, because I think that the infant, when it comes here, you know, its eyesight is still divine. And it's reading auras and seeing halos of luminescent color and sparkling light all around it. And it's excited to face its new venture. And it's a little expressing machine. Because if a baby is sleeping, nothing disturbs him. If he's awake, he looks around. If he's hungry, he cries for food. If he's happy, he gurgles contentedly. If he's angry, he releases. And in spite of the fact that no words are shared between you and the infant, you get a pretty good idea of how he feels and what he wants on a moment-to-moment basis. And the baby never thinks, oh, how terrible, I'm behaving badly. The baby just responds to his emotions and moves from one to another with ease and alacrity. And that's what you're learning to do. You're learning to just let that fear come up and to accept that it's there and then to move through it and move on. And that's that's a wonderful exercise. I mean, if that's all you learn while you're here, you're way ahead of the game.
Yeah, no. And it's so funny because I have done certain things you know, I can remember 10 years ago when I was intentionally going into chaos. You know, my friends would look at me and go, why are you doing that? And, you know, I just had an intuitive sense. I was like, well, first of all, I understood the science that, you know, because I would use frequencies to bring up certain things, emotions and thresholds of my being. And, you know, my friends were all like, you know, well, why would you do that? And it's like, well, because see, ultimately, I don't want to live with any of this. You know, in other words, I really understood early that there's no sidestepping this. And at this point, I'm actually starting to learn. I've been clearing for 16 years, and I'm not just, you know, like I said, I'm not here to toot my own horn. Like I'm perfectly clear, but I really do understand now that the stuff I'm clearing at this point is a lot of it is mass consciousness. It's not mine. You know, I'm in the world, but not of the world. But I'm delighted to clear it because ultimately we all have the potential to be cleared, non-polarized beings. And that excites me to no end. You know, that to live on a planet that, you know, really that would be experienced from the human population. And the human population older than two, because you're absolutely right. I experienced this from the babies, you know, hands down. I have, you know, I can remember, you know, someone once asked me, how do you discipline a baby? And I'm like, are you kidding me? You don't discipline a baby, you know, and I have worked with, you know, premature babies that were colic. Believe me, I know what it's like, you know, when the child screams for hours. It is,
it's excruciating. You can't believe it. It was probably the most offensive experience I ever had to my being, where I couldn't calm the baby down. You know, I was doing energy work and singing and utilizing, you know, a spinning technique. That helped a little, actually. But, you know, inevitably what it was, their insides were not fully developed. So just drinking milk, which they need to sustain, hurt them. You know, it was acidic in their insides. So they cried. And it was just a very interesting thing. But on average, you know, discipline a baby, it's like, no, discipline yourself. Have you ever seen the show Dog Whisperer?
No, but I know about that. I mean, I've watched shows that have dog whispers, so I know what you're talking about.
Well, there's a line he uses. He rehabilitates dogs and trains people.
Right. I know, and I think that's true. Because I think energy is reflecting each other. So the dog is reflecting the energy of the master.
Yes.
And so
yes.
For the dog to change, the master has to change, because the dog is imitating how the master behaves. And so it has to be with the change has to be within. Same thing, idea of when you went back to live with your father, it wasn't about your father changing who he was. It was about your seeing it in a different way. It was
absolutely
about, because you can't change other people. You can't change anyone else except yourself. And so you can't change the dog until you change.
Well, and that's it. Because what makes me laugh is when you're on the, it's so funny, when I'm on the outside, like as a nanny in these families, especially as I have older kids now who are 6 and 3, I see the mother, you know, disciplining the 6-year-old, but I see the 6-year-old literally just repeating the behavior the mother does. She's just unconscious that she's doing it. Mm-hmm. But she's not unconscious of the child doing it. She's unconscious that the child is getting it, because I'm watching both of them going, oh, well, Wani, you know, where do you think Anya gets this? You know,
and that's what the book about is that's what Love Parent is about, the idea that you have to be the person you want your children to be, because they don't learn through words, and they learn through behavior. They watch how you behave, and then they behave as you do in their own way. So they're just mirroring each other, and that's why they're together, to help each other learn together. So they are the child has planned this journey from a place of complete understanding of what it needs and complete understanding of the people it is joining. So they are together to help each other move through that place.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, I think the beauty is, because see, I know it's an interesting thing. I don't have kids of my own, which I really want. And I'm not giving up on that. I am not giving up on that.
Maybe it's more about wanting what you have. Because
right on, sister. Right on. Go ahead, speak it.
This is what your soul believes is helpful to you. And so it is about wanting what you have instead of, you know, wanting what you don't have. Because when you want what you don't have, you're always in a state of lack. And once you want what you have, you're always in a state of abundance. And so that's the approach to take. That's what you want to remember.
Well, and clearly, being around children for the last 20 years, I understand of my blessings, you know. And the funny part about it was, it wasn't like I wanted to be a nanny my whole life. You know, it's not like I watched Mary Poppins and said, I want to be her. You know, I kind of fell into it when I was 25. I was out of work, and a friend of mine who was a nanny, who also went to college to be a nanny, you know, to be educated, said, listen, just take the job that we need. And I was like, all right, listen, I need the money. And then at first it was like, are you kidding me? Do people actually get paid to play? That's the way I looked at it. I was like, this is really cool. And 5 years into it, I knew immediately. It was like, I mean, this is what I wanted to do. And what was interesting is I didn't even remember till later on. My mother was a nursery school teacher for 12 years. She was my nursery school teacher. So we really do pick our parents. I recognized how my mom kind of gave me the kid gene, so to speak. We both had a passion for being with children. She ended up getting into a fight with the woman who owned the thing because she took on a different partner and not my mom, and then my mom went corporate. So after, when I grew up, my mom was in corporate, so I had forgotten. It's like, oh, wow, when I was a kid, she taught nursery school. And, you know, just like your book states, I don't believe that's a coincidence that she taught nursery school and I'm the nanny for 20 years. That to me just doesn't, you know, that's not a coincidence.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I definitely, I wholeheartedly feel that, you know, what our parents do absolutely is, you know, because you have a chapter on genes.
Yes.
What the child chooses before arriving. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Everything. They choose exactly who they want to come through. They choose the genes they want to have from both parents, and they choose their personality and their talents and their everything that they feel is going to help them live the journey they want to live. So
right.
There are no errors, and there's no hit or miss. It's planned by the parent, and it's planned by the child, and the parent has agreed.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Not consciously, but unconsciously, with the soul. Soul has agreed that they have lessons to learn together, and they can benefit from being together, and they can help each other.
Yeah. No, I wholeheartedly agree. And the interesting thing about it is, since coming home after my mom has died, me and my father have a fabulous relationship now. I mean, we really are, we're buds. And I now see, like, my father has helped me also learn living passionately. Like, my mother left her passion for children and ended up being in the corporate world, which, in my personal opinion, just bounced her around horribly. But, you know, that was her journey.
I have to interrupt, and I have to remind you of something. I have to say something to you. Right,
please,
now.
Please, of course.
When you
okay.
said that you're now you and your father are best buds. Well, what more could you want from what you went through? I mean, this is
oh,
what
no, absolutely. I agree. Absolutely. No, it's exactly.
Here.
And especially before his passing, which means I'm clear. You know, it means I have a beautiful relationship that indeed.
Yeah. I mean,
hands down.
And when you told
yes.
me that, I just went goosebumps all over because I realized that, you know, all this that you've been talking about was just leading up. I mean, you chose all those challenges just so that you could forgive and move on, and that is what it's all about.
Absolutely.
So, and don't worry about finding the next job. You'll find the next job that is perfect for the energy that is waiting for you. All this means is if you've lost a job now, all it means is that the energy that you were with is moving on in a different direction, and you're moving on in a different direction, so you are no longer compatible to be together. So
absolutely.
Now that you are free and open and waiting for the universe to present to you what is your next, you know, your next leap into faith in yourself. And so that's a wonderful place to be.
Oh, no, you're sweet. Just so you know, I often take devil's advocate because I want to be also for the listener. So you're absolutely right. Everything you just said, absolutely positively. And it's so funny because I had a reading by a woman who does galactic work. She said, stop talking about the fight. Turn around and start noticing the beauty of what is available right now. And,
right. And what you've learned. What you live, that's what you should be telling everybody, because that's what they need to know. They need to have the faith from you that the challenges were all worth it, because look where you are now, and that is such a great something so wonderful to share with other people. You know that.
Yeah.
You,
namaste. That, thank you. Indeed.
It.
Let's
you
know? Do it. Yes. So well, I do. I would like to say that one of the things I learned from my father. In our dance of being, you know, best buds, is my father was a very passionate man. He was an engineer, and he was passionate. He is actually an alchemist. And I'm also an alchemist. What he did with metal, I do with emotions. And what's so interesting is I recognize when I thought he was, quote-unquote, the absentee father who was not here, you know, all the time, you know, emotionally and physically, what he was really expressing to me was a person living in passion. And I so get that now, because I know when I'm living in my passion, boyfriends, friends, truly nothing gets in my, you know, and I've been like, you know, how can you ignore me? It's like, I'm not ignoring you. I'm just following my own passion. I'm in my passion, I'm creating, and this is where I choose to be, because this is, and whether it's the forest or meditating or children, whatever, you know, I truly, truly understand that he also has always told me, not in these words, but this is my words now that I get from him, he taught me to be sovereign. He was like, don't rely on me, be independent. And I take it even one step further and go, don't rely on, you know, we often look for the outside world to help us on the inside. No, 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 no. Be sovereign and create the outside world, because then it's your world. And right. Here's the funny part. It's the way it's being created anyways. It's just whether we're looking at it from that perspective or not.
Yeah, well, you're creating it. It's just that you're now taking you're taking credit for creating it.
Exactly.
You're always creating it because all the negativity was bringing negativity back, and now the positivity is bringing positivity back.
Yeah.
So it's all in perfect order, and that's how
yeah.
it's perfect order for the future for you, too, in terms of the energy you find.
Oh, no, most definitely. I mean, I went on a job interview Tuesday night, and I've already surrendered that if I don't get it, you know, in other words, okay, then life is still, spirit is still creating it, because I couldn't imagine. I tell all my friends, I have never imagined myself homeless. That's why I know I won't be there. You know, that just wouldn't, I wouldn't be there. You know, those thoughts don't even come across in my mind. Because part of this whole game, and I love that you see life as a game, I see it as a game as well, and that's not to discredit how challenging and how heartfelt and deep it is. I mean, we are deep down the rabbit hole here, hands down.
You know, it
might be an illusion, but that brick wall, if you run your car into that brick wall, you are going to feel it.
Well, I mean, even homelessness can be a gift, because I just talked to a radio host a week or so ago who said she was homeless at one time, and that it was one of the biggest gifts she ever had in her life.
I love it. Yes, I absolutely agree. Everything is a gift.
Yeah, she had
especially the challenges. Especially the challenges.
She connected with people that reminded her that, you know, material things were not that important. She connected with people who had a focus more on their loving hearts and who had loving hearts around them. And she said it was a great reminder and a great time in her life that moved her forward in a way that nothing else could have. So that's, again, about trusting that, you know, whatever comes our way, our soul believes is a wise growth spurt for us and accepting it. And you were talking before about discipline and how you can't teach a child, you know, infant.
Only an infant.
No,
an infant.
No, about discipline. But there's a chapter on discipline where another word is called focused love. So it's about letting the child be focused on what it needs to focus on and not what the parent needs the child to focus on. Because if you're trying to discipline your children to be interested in what you're interested in and not what they're interested in, that is not discipline. That is tyranny. So we need to encourage our children to go in the direction in which they came here to go in, because they know what they want to get out of this lifetime. They know what their interest is. They know where their talent lies. All the parent has to do is encourage them to live it and encourage them and support them in that direction.
I agree. I agree. And I've seen it on, like, my own brother, because we were raised Jewish, like, there is just an expectation that we go to college. I mean, that's just as simple as that. It's part of the culture. And it doesn't matter, boys or girls, everybody's going to college. Now, I didn't go to college till I was 30, because I'm a rebel, you know, I was a rebel without a cause. But I have seen, like, my father, you know, pushed my brother when he was younger to be a doctor. And then it was clear he didn't have the grades for that. And then they pushed him to be an accountant, because it was always, you know, they were always motivated by the jobs that made money. Well, my brother's a salesman, and he's a natural. I mean, he could sell ice to an Eskimo. He truly could sell ice to an Eskimo. And it's like, they didn't even know, my mom and my dad didn't even know to see that, you know, when we were setting up candy stores as a kid, or, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I agree wholeheartedly that the success shouldn't be based on the financial rewards of the job. The success should be based on, are you in your passion?
Right.
That's what success is.
Right.
Because the money really will follow however it works, even if it's creating your own niche, a niche that didn't exist, and you created it. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's so, you know, there's so much culturally, you know, involved where, you know, everybody's like, well, you got to be a doctor, you got to be a lawyer, you got to be an engineer. And it's like, well, you know, if you're not built for that, if you're built to be, you know, I don't know, a chef, you can be one of the greatest chefs on the planet if that's your passion, you know. And these are, you know, the growing pangs of parents. And I see it all the time, like with friends of mine or, you know, people raising children that are like, I just want the best for my child. And it's like, well, then let your child be the boss, you know, of his own destiny.
Well, the child, the child chooses to come through a parent who is that way. So you have to trust that. If the child has chosen a parent who is trying to steer it in a direction that the child doesn't want to go in, that the child wants that challenge. So everything is, you have to remember, always
right.
Perfect order.
Right.
Everything is the way.
Okay, well, let me use it. So that's interesting that you say that. So when you say, and I totally honor that, but so would you say it's interfering to tell the child, you know, things that, you know, that they have the right to follow their own passion? Do you consider that to be an interference?
No, I think that's support, telling the child to follow their own pattern. But I'm talking about the child who chooses the parent who can't do that. The child has chosen that parent for whatever reason. So, I mean, everything is in perfect order, and it isn't about something being wrong or the parent being wrong. It's about the parent living the life that it's chosen to live. I mean, the parent has its challenges too, but the child doesn't enter that family without knowing the attitude of the parents, without knowing how the parents are going to react to the interest that infant has or that growing child has. So that child and that parent are together because the child and the parent thought it was wise, the unconscious or the soul of each thought it was wise. So that's why it's impossible to look at somebody else living their life and to judge what's happening in those relationships, because we have no, you and I have no understanding of why that child came here, what it wants to learn while it's here, what it believes will work in terms of a challenge. You know, the challenge that you took with your father, another person wouldn't work for another person. So you took the challenge that would work for you. I took the challenge
right.
that would work for me, and that's what's happening for everybody. So it's about respecting that each person has the path they need. And, you know, that's what the book is about, Love Parent. It's about coming back to this idea that whatever is going on is about teaching the child to be responsible for themselves, to honor who they are, and that's the best parent you can be. I mean, after all, if you teach your child to go off and be independent and live a life where he's joyful in what he's doing, you've succeeded as a parent. The parent doesn't agree to always love the child, to always respect the child, to always agree with the child. The parent has only agreed to be the catalyst for the child, so that the child can find itself while it is here. It's the catalyst,
right.
So it isn't about, you know, blame, and it isn't about finding fault or judgment. It's about remembering that the two people are together, or the parent and the child are together for their own reasons, for their own wisdom, for their own sake of evolving into a bigger heart, and that's all we have to trust.
Mm. Yeah, that's. I mean, because I'm sitting here thinking to myself, you know, it really is like, you know, such a tremendous job, because, you know, the nature of the child is that, you know, it starts off an infant completely dependent upon everything, you know, people, you know, it's not an independent being yet. You know, it's still radiating independence, so to speak, but it's physically, it needs, you know, it needs our help, whether from, you know, the parents, a caregiver, whomever. you know, and then they get into the toddler stage where, you know, they get legs and they can start, you know, kind of roaming, you know, their field of awareness is expanding and they know it by the power of their ability to walk away from mom or the caregiver. You know, and then, you know, it's just the whole experience is that I think it's very interesting how so many books are written on the development of the child, but I think there's very few books written on the development of parenting having to also change with the development of the child, you know, well, to be in congruency with what the child's needs really are.
Well, that's we're all here to learn together. So, I mean, I know I learned a lot from my children, and I'm sure you learned a lot from your wards, the children you took care of. So it's
yeah.
We have chosen the way we wanted to do that, and you've chosen one way, I've chosen another. So what? We know our souls knew what would work for us, and so that's what was chosen.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, no, definitely, and because I'm a big fan of awareness. You know, it's like, because, you know, like you, I don't think mistakes are, we need a new word for mistakes, because a mistake is really just something that helps me learn to be aware of, you know, if I do this, this happens, and either it's something that I resonate with that result or I don't. So, you know, once we start learning cause and effect, like I remember my father came into my room once when I first told him about the radio show. He was pretty adamant going, you know, I won't give you any money to support you. This is your thing, and I think it's a pipe dream. I mean, he had a few other choice words, but we won't get into them. That was the basic message. And what I actually came to realize from the reflection point of view was, as time went on, he was the voice of my own insecurities, that this was a pipe dream and that this couldn't happen for me. I basically projected that onto him. Now, once I got awareness that he was that, I started watching him from the witness point of view to see, as I worked on my own self-confidence from a subconscious level, I was working on it, he would start coming in going, how'd the show go tonight? And then there was one time 2 years ago when I first came onto Blog Talk Radio from terrestrial radio, I was thinking about, you know, just letting it go and not doing the show anymore. And he came into my room and he was like, you can't give up on your dream. You're good at this. You're supposed to be doing it. You know, it was just,
okay.
Yeah, it was, but that didn't come until after, exactly like you said, I had the awareness that, because I tell my friends, you got to know what to put, you know, what's people's roles, because they're really just aspects of ourselves.
Here's what happened. You honored the show. And then he honored the show.
Yes.
So before, when you weren't honoring the show, you weren't honoring your need to have the show, he was just reflecting your lack of faith.
Absolutely.
As soon as you had faith in the show and you were honoring it, he did. And so you can't expect other people to give you what you won't give yourself.
Right on.
So, and
I think that is an experience that the energy of today is blatantly showing us.
Well, and this is what this book is about in terms of parent and child. You can't expect your child to be something that you aren't yourself. You have to example who you want the child to be. You have to, if you want the child to live a happy life, you want them to go out and have a spiritual journey that is meaningful, then you have to show them why that's advantageous.
Yes.
For your children to be inspired by you, they must watch you enjoy your life. And if you can't figure out how to do that, you can't help them do it. And lamenting the world's moral fiber won't give your children spiritual values. It teaches them to blame others for everything that is wrong.
Exactly. So well
the
said.
Moral, the virtue of moral behavior. You have to live that moral behavior.
Yeah. So yeah. You know, this is a great time to segue into parenting the inner child, because, I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about right here.
Well, I mean, it's about being, you know, it's always about being the person you want other people to be, or being the parent you wish your parents had been to you. If you're not happy with how your parents treated you, then be the parent you wish they were, because that's the only way you, as you do that, you heal yourself. And it isn't about your parents changing. Sometimes your parents aren't even still here. So, but you can't change other people. It's back to that same basic idea. You can't change them, and you didn't come here wanting to change them. You came here wanting to learn what you needed to learn through them. whatever they did. And your parents make decisions for their sake, not for your sake. They have their journey too. They have what they came here to learn, and they should stick to what they need to learn. They don't need to be changing for you. They change for themselves.
Yeah, you know, and most people would call that bad parenting. Most unconscious people.
Well, I mean, I don't know. There's all kinds of circumstances. I'm just saying that you can't.
No. I agree with you, though. I didn't mean to say it that way. I agree that live the example. Don't preach an example. Live the example.
You're saying that most people think that you should sacrifice for your children. But if you sacrifice,
thank you.
If you sacrifice for your children, all you're doing is teaching your children that it's okay to sacrifice their happiness. That's the only thing they learn from when you do that. I had a friend who had a child who was going through a time of sacrificing her happiness. She had a child who was sacrificing her happiness for somebody else. And my friend had done the same thing. And I said, well, where do you think she learned to do that?
Mm.
Learned to do that from you.
Mm-hmm.
So this is you know, you don't teach your children to have a happy life by sacrificing your happiness for them. That just teaches them to go off and do the same thing in their life. And your greatest gift to your children is to enjoy your life, because then you show them that enjoying your life is possible.
Absolutely. That's what my father showed me.
Yeah.
I mean, truly. I mean, and he's relatively healthy. He's 77 years old. I mean, he's living quite a good life, actually, and you know, I mean, it really took on such a different spin, you know, and I am totally grateful to have experienced that, totally. Because I mean, I can remember being a time when, you know, I was in my early 30s. I basically had a nervous breakdown at 30 and changed my whole life. I was just such a mess, and when I started going to therapy, which I highly recommend, you know, not just going to therapy, but going someplace where I think people need to hear, talk about themselves. If they don't, you know, it's like if they don't have the awareness that life is being reflected back to them, go and talk about your life to somebody who can help bring you that awareness. Because, you know, I know when I grew, my parents were like, you know, we don't go to therapy. We get everything better inside the house. I'm like, well, it's inside the house that I'm going crazy. You know, it's like I'm going to therapy. I could tell they were so, you know, there was a stigma still around it.
Right.
You know, even after Oprah and all that kind of good stuff coming out, it's like, you know, it's like I highly recommend, because for me, I started off at regular therapy, and then I was like, then I started really connecting into my soul, and I was like, okay, now I want some, like, I want energy work. You know, I want to feel this. And I started doing hypnotherapy, you know, and then my mother died, which actually became the best therapy, in the sense of I was so obsessed almost with knowing what is life after we die? What is that? Because my best friend is on that other side and I need to know about it. Because I couldn't, all my fears erupted when my mother died, because she protected me when I was a knucklehead. I mean, it was all pretty dysfunctional. But so when she died, you know, I was like, I was incredibly vulnerable. And in that vulnerability, I went, I must learn about this so I'm not vulnerable. And it ironically took me deeper into the metaphysical, which I've had several experiences with my mother, you know, to this day that, you know, I'm still in communication with my mother, and I'm deeply grateful for that communication, because it helps me understand everything from the eternal parts. You know, I used to tell people it's devastating to have a parent or anyone, you know, a loved one pass on, but now you have an angel that knows you directly. You know, I mean, like, you have connection with somebody that can really help you understand that part of life. Because it is still, in my humble opinion, we don't die. We lose the body, but we don't cease to exist. You know, there is, like people often think, you know, there's life after death, but they don't realize, well, where do you think we came from? You know, like you were saying in the book, we got to be so. It's like this isn't our first lifetime. it's the whole gig is a recycling experience from the time we were.
Yeah, I believe our lifetime is. I believe our lifetime is like a blip in the radar screen, and it's such a minuscule part of our whole entire experience. But it's just an exercise that we decide to do. We decide to come here and exercise our ability to grow and to evolve even more than we already are evolved. And we pick the challenges, and that's what this wonderful energy has done that comes to join us. And I believe that we came here at one time. When we first came to this beautiful earth, I think we came here as autonomous beings, and we could just lower our vibrations and to where we were form and matter. And so we're trying to get back to that place that we understood ourselves so completely that we could be wherever we wanted to be, whenever we wanted to be there.
And so I agree.
This is just a part of our journey back to the home, to home, really, of knowing who we are and being able to live as the powerful God we are.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, for me, and feelings are really such a deep part, because I agree that we're a blip on the screen, but boy, you know, go 24 hours with a broken heart, and holy moly, it feels like 10 years. You know, it's such, time slows down, it feels like an eternity. It's like, the pain is an absolute teacher, hands down. It, ironically, going numb almost killed me. Like, it's so funny, because I just posted tonight a picture of someone falling, saying, you know, when we fall, the fall doesn't kill us. The sudden change in direction kills us. The fall doesn't kill us, and feelings won't kill us. Like, one of my first therapists said to me, running from your pain won't kill you. Pain won't kill you. Running from it will.
Right.
And that, yeah, well, because I was a drug addict and an alcoholic. I was just a mess. And so I'm really starting to understand that, you know, there's so many cultural indications that say, you know, don't feel, have a drink, buy a car, you know, eat a sandwich. When the feelings of life is really the juice of, you know, it's why we are in this dimension. The third dimension is so that we could slow everything down so much and feel all of it. The good, the bad, the painful, the beautiful, the ecstatic, the blissful, all of it is truly, we don't get that in other dimensions. When we're instantaneously manifesting our thoughts, it manifests, and then if we put our focus someplace else, it literally turns back into a cosmic soup, and it unmanifests. We're here, we get to really experience what our creations are in. When we understand it from a deeper level, the macrocosm level, the soul level, pain takes on a totally different perspective. Because when I started figuring out that my father was teaching me humility, I started also understanding, like, I used to run away from relationships. It, you know, when relationships get painful, I was usually the first one that says, hey, you know, back to match.com. There's always somebody else in line that I can play with. But then you're not, you know, it's like you're not going vertical. You're not going deep into life, because deep into life is the painful stuff that you experience with a partner. And when you get through those painful experiences, you're alchemized because of it. You know, something happens.
Well, the thing is, if you don't deal with what it is that's going on, you just keep finding the same partner over and over again, no matter how many times you go.
That's true. That's true.
So, this person may look different, but they're not. They're only reflecting you. It's the same person over.
Right on.
And over.
You're right on. That's
yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
You have to,
that's
you
exactly.
Always, remember, you can't. You take yourself with you wherever you go, and you're going to find that person who's still, you know, and that's good, because your soul is saying to you, you know, you can run and as fast as you can, you're still going to face yourself, you're still going to face the same, part of you that
yes.
you've dealt with, no matter how many people you think you have to get rid of and move on with. So.
Well, right, because, you know, there's a famous saying, you know, everybody else's problems are, you know, they're so much bigger than your own, and you wouldn't even be aware of anybody else's problems if they weren't within you. I mean, it just wouldn't hit you as a problem, you know.
They mirror something that's going on with you. So now I want to bring up something that you had brought up earlier.
Okay.
At the risk of offending you.
Oh, no, you can't offend me. I love truth, and I love, please.
Okay, well, the idea that you were talking earlier about fear and that that it's not really your fear, that it's the mass consciousness fear, I would question that because you only feel from others what you feel within or what you have made other people fear. So if you are dealing with fear, it is not from the mass consciousness. It's from something within you that needs to be dealt with regarding fear. But it sounds to me like you're doing everything you need to do with the deal of fear. You're letting it come. You're letting it be. You're not resisting it. You're dealing with it. You're admitting that it's there. You're walking through it. And that's all that needs to be done. But this is not mass consciousness fear. This is your own fear. The whole world, you only feel in the world what you feel in yourself.
Mm.
There's lots of people in the world who don't have that fear, but you're only feeling the part of you, the part of others that's similar to your emotion. So if you...
Oh, okay. Well, if you don't, as I'm taking you in, and I shouldn't say that it's none of it is mine, because you're absolutely right. If I didn't have it, I wouldn't feel it. I mean, I don't have a fear of spiders. I just don't. So I don't feel fear around spiders. I guess the best way to say it is I believe that on some level it's not it's no longer dictating my actions.
Yeah, and
my
feel that's what you said. It wasn't because you're dealing with it. You know?
Right.
But don't blame it on the mass consciousness because.
Right on, Betsy. You got it.
Takes away from what needs to be dealt with. You know, it's not my fault. It's the mass consciousness fault. That's not part of
yeah.
That.
Well, that's also a mass consciousness thought. But you're absolutely you're spot on, my friend. You are spot on. I own it. Absolutely. And I appreciate the correction. So.
Okay.
Yeah, don't worry about offending me. I love it. Converse, speak your truth, be passionate.
Right.
You know, God knows I live on that. I live on vertical. I do. I mean, horizontal. I think part of what we're all starting to actually become aware of is the importance of being and not doing.
Well, like the child. The child just bees. I mean, it just is.
Yes.
It's happy, it gurgles, it's angry, it releases. It's showing us the way God wants what God wants for us, and so that's what you're doing. I mean, that's what I'm hearing from you. You're noticing the fear. You're letting it come up. You're letting it be. You're not resisting it. That's all positive. That's how you deal. And it doesn't mean that fear leaves you forever just because you're dealing with it now. But you do the same release that you let it come up. You know, if it comes up in a month, you let it come up. You deal with it and you move on. And it gets to be a habit where you can deal with just about any emotion that comes up because you let it, you don't resist it. You don't pretend
absolutely.
It's there. You don't pretend it isn't there. You don't suppress it. You just let it be. That's how God lives, you know, that's how...
Through us.
Yes, I mean, that's also how energy is. You know, energy expresses, and the child, the infant, is showing us how that, you know, showing us how to live our lives.
Yeah. Well, you know, in light of what we just talked about, I want the audience to know where I am not as comfortable is, like, I'm comfortable, so to speak, in feeling the fear around finances. I just know I'm going to be taken care of. It's as simple as that. And believe me, there are many aspects in my life that, from the physical point of view, have shown me that. So where I'm uncomfortable, feeling uncomfortable, is in relationships. Intimate relationships are definitely something that have, you know, still to this day challenges me. So, you know, because I've always said I am not 100% a Christed being yet. Or I should say I have not self-actualized, because I believe that I already exist as 100% self-actualized, but that is not, that experience, that level of consciousness
is not what is always moving through my body. I've had moments of it.
Well, now, what if your soul wants you exactly where you are without a relationship? What if your soul believes that your growth is best served by not having a relationship? What about that?
Then that's where I am.
Yeah.
That's
also about accepting that this is the journey that you need for right now, instead of saying, the one problem I have is that I don't have a relationship. That is not a problem. That is just a situation.
Right. No, I hear you. Well, I'll explain a little deeper because it'll help. I'm in a relationship right now with a man who's autistic.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of emotional and lack of emotional, and it's in the wiring.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an interesting relationship. I'm definitely learning about myself and humility. Humility is a big thing for me. I know I come in, I came into this lifetime with an arrogance. I know that, and I'm, you know, willing or unwillingly putting myself in situations to transform that because, you know, I moved in with my dad, you know. I mean, that was clearly a situation that I needed to have humility, and my situation with my boyfriend right now is definitely is, you know, it requires humility. I mean,
okay, tell me what irritates you the most about your boyfriend.
The lack of physical touch. That's not how he communicates.
Okay, so you have chosen a boyfriend who can't give you the physical touch that you want.
Right, and it's in the wiring, which is what everybody tells me. It's not going to change.
Forget about him.
Play. Let's play. Okay. Okay.
He can't touch you the way you need to be touched. So why are you with somebody who can't touch you the way you need to be touched? Because you aren't being kind to yourself if that's what you're choosing for a relationship.
Well, I look at it a little differently in that, well, first of all, I'm very attracted to him. So if I'm attracted, you know, not of the mind, but my being is attracted to be with him, I'm just following that attraction. Because I believe my soul does want me to learn something here and experience something that goes beyond just being touched for the joy of being touched.
Okay. Okay. So are you learning that?
Well, I am, you know, to be honest, you know, in his beautiful Asperger self, he's carrying some pretty high frequencies that I have absolutely had some expanded experiences in his presence.
Okay.
So there are benefits, even though I'm not getting touched.
So this is what you need to do. You need to focus on what it is he brings to your life instead of what he doesn't bring to your life.
That's part of the journey, indeed.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Every day, remind yourself why you're in the relationship, what is good about the relationship, what is valuable about the relationship. And every time that negative voice inside of you says, but,
right.
So then you say, but this is what he's giving me. This is what I have. This is why he's in my life. This is what I'm learning. And then you must get into the habit of doing that over and over again, because you know what? When you do that, he's going to feel that, whether you know it or not. He's going to feel that you've taken an attitude that he is bringing something valuable to your life, and he's going to feel that. He's not. And if you don't have that negative, but this is what you should be.
You're absolutely right. Yes.
You know,
yes.
If he feels that, then he's going to shy away even more. But if you...
Yeah, no, he responds. What I have learned is when I connect to my own source and not... Like, I am reprogramming what I, quote-unquote, expect from a boyfriend by being in this relationship. Because when I expect him to fulfill my happiness, oh, all hell breaks loose in that house.
Right.
And truly, it just... Because he's very sovereign. I mean, he is. Even though I'm starting to learn, he just communicates his needs differently. Mm-hmm. So he's not totally sovereign. It's just, from my perspective, well, if you're not touchy-feely, then you must be totally okay being by yourself. That's not the case. And it's something I'm learning.
Mm-hmm.
But I have absolutely learned that when I go
connected to my source and just show up, just sharing love his way, not expecting anything in return, everything is a totally different experience than when I go expecting him to make me feel better, and like I said, and then all hell breaks loose.
Because you're expecting him to give you something he can't give you.
Exactly.
But when you go to him and you appreciate who he is, then he feels loved.
Yes. Yes. And doesn't it sound simple? The programming, though, is like a constant. There is, I have to always be on point, literally on point.
All you have to remember
Pardon?
Is that it's not about him. It's about
right.
you.
Yeah, absolutely.
You remimember that, you'll be okay. Cause it's
no, indeed. And I'm far enough along on this journey, it's why I'm in this relationship. Because, I mean, we have jokingly said, I'm like, you know, we're transforming each other. I'm not sure into what. But I do appreciate your transforming me. And he has said to me, well, how have I transformed you? And then I would share with him how, you know, I'm becoming more independent. I mean, like, in a couple of weeks, I'm flying to Wisconsin to be with some friends. And normally I would want my boyfriend to go with me. I can't travel alone, and I'm getting stronger. You know, I'm recognizing I can totally travel alone, and I can do things that make me happy, and he's still going to be there, but he doesn't have to come to do them with me. There's a strengthening, like, it's almost like I get to be alone on some level, even though I'm with him, which helps me to get strong enough to be with myself and love me, which then allows me to be with anybody,
it seems to
him
me that,
or anybody.
It seems to me that everybody in your life is giving you that gift, because your mother gave that
Absolutely.
Gift to you by leaving. Your father gave that gift to you by saying he wasn't going to support you, and now you're giving it to yourself. And you're saying, okay, I can be independent, and I can. And you
absolutely.
Have a boyfriend. You have a boyfriend who's making it impossible for you to lean on him. I mean, what more perfect gift could there be?
Well, and you know, namaste, Betsy. Truly, because you know, most people would see the perfect relationship as the man that does everything for you. And I'm like, you know, it's like a muscle you atrophy if you don't know you can do it yourself.
That is what you grew up believing, but I don't think that's the perfect relationship anymore out there. That's
what you mean, what I just stated, or?
Right, what you just stated, I think.
Right,
that's,
I agree.
That may have been what was forced upon the woman years ago, but that hasn't been true for a long time. But that may be how you grew up believing it was supposed to be.
It's absolutely what I'm alchemizing. That is the belief systems that I'm working through. Exactly. I mean, the whole, you know, I've been, some people are waiting for a savior. My whole life was waiting for Prince Charming.
Okay, so maybe last lifetime, you know, like totally dependent on the person you were with, and so much that you completely lost yourself in the bargain.
Yes.
So this time you came here with a challenge you needed to learn more about independence, and to learn more that other people didn't make you happy, that you made yourself happy. And
yes.
Other people couldn't complete you. You had to complete yourself. And
yes.
So here you are, and it sounds to me like your soul is choosing beautifully.
Oh, thank you. I agree. I agree, even though, you know, it's hard. I love having dialogues about this, because it takes a nuance to understand that. You know what I mean? You have to understand the soul in order to understand these choices. Otherwise, from just a strictly third dimensional point of view, they don't look rational.
Well, you just have to look and ask yourself, you know, the minute you say to yourself, what is this person bringing to me, instead of what is this person not bringing me, you completely shifted your focus.
That's true.
Gone
yes.
into a completely different mode of existing. And that's why your boyfriend reacts to you in the new mode so much better than he does in the old mode, because you wouldn't like somebody to come up to you and say, you aren't giving me what I need. I mean, it isn't your job to give another person what they need. They have to give themselves what they need.
Absolutely. Well, and ironically, the more he doesn't let me lean on him, the more I'm aware of what I call vampires around me. You know, where, I mean, it has shown up in my beautiful friend, my beautiful friend, I have an email friend who she's listening to the show, or I think she's on vacation, so she might be catching this in the archive. Her name is Susan. She's lovely. And she actually wrote in her email, she was like, I'm not becoming dependent on you. And I was like, I know you're not, because I can sense, I mean, clearly when I'm being drained, you know, when someone is starting to rely on me for whatever, for energy, for whatever, it doesn't matter, for sex, for anything. I've experienced all of that. And you're absolutely right. It does not feel good to, you know, I don't want to be someone's exhale. You know, I want to just be my own and you be your own, and together we dance in a sovereign dance that says, you know, we kind of come, it's almost like, you know, a lot of people feel like marriage, the minute you get married, it's like a block on the creativity, because, you know, I've always said, I'll be in a relationship, and if you want to leave, I don't want to need a lawyer for you to leave. If you want to leave, you go. You know, in other words, the dance isn't about the law of us, of the commitment. The dance is about the commitment to self, and as long as you're feeling this relationship, let's dance. And if you're not feeling this relationship, then the door is there. You're free to go, and that's not a bad thing. You know, that's,
well, I mean, if you have your boyfriend and you're being needy with the boyfriend in a way he can't be needy, in a way he can't give to you, then other people are going to come into your life who are needy to reflect who you are. That's all. That's what your friend is,
right,
is doing.
Well, and what's actually happening, though, is they're not coming into my life. You know, I'm finding whether it's me releasing them or the new people I'm attracting, and I don't mean boyfriends, just people in general.
Right.
Their goal is, they are reflecting me in the sense of they are looking for their sovereignty, and they are looking for, you know, they're looking within to the experiences without. You know, they're not blaming the world. You're right on. And you know, the reflections are really, because, I mean, that's the ultimate gift you can give somebody, is by, in your own being, be sovereign.
Yeah, I mean, I always tell people, you don't have to worry about where you are in life. Just notice the people around you and notice where they are in their life, because whatever they're doing is what you're doing. So you always have your answer. The universe keeps you up to form, up to date, day by day, on your progress by the people you have around you. So there's never
right
any,
on.
Yeah.
Right on. That's concerned. Hot, babe. All right, I want to give the number again. 646-929-2084. I would love it if somebody called in and shared a story and or shared a comment, or, you know, just said hi. all right, so we have a half an hour. So I definitely like, okay, so this, we're basically speaking of the inner child, right? Parenting our inner child. This
right.
Whole conversation has been about that, you know, I mean, this topic. So
remember, the same things apply to the child that apply to the adult. So if the child thrives on being told they're enough and they're lovable and they're acceptable, adults thrive on the same idea. So it's all about that. But if you get into some of the other chapters, like the chapter, for instance, on homework, I'm afraid I disagree with some of the school tactics these days, because I think that children should be completely responsible for their homework. I think it's a wonderful opportunity to teach children the nature of productivity and self-responsibility, and that homework is, to me, clearly something that is geared to the children and should be their responsibility, that they learn how to handle the lessons and plan their time and become responsible and accountable for what they're doing. Because life after you leave school, you don't have somebody jumping in and saying, oh, well, I'll do that test for you. It's a perfect opportunity for children to begin that whole idea of self-achievement. And so there's a chapter about that. And then there's a chapter about...
Well, will you talk about adoption?
Sure.
Because we were talking so much about the kids that came through their parents, and I totally believe soulmates are actually totally... adoptive parents are definitely with the children they're supposed to be with, but
right.
I would love your feel on that.
Well, the idea that if you desire to adopt a child, the desire to be adopted exists in another. So the only difference between adoption and other means of child rearing is the route by which the two of you get together.
Mm.
And I think
that's beautiful.
Some of the advice in the chapter is about telling the child as soon as they're curious of where they, you know, where that they are adopted, in a way that is comfortable for you to tell them when they're young and will still be comfortable when they get older. And I think children, when they're ready to learn about their origin, they ask you about it. So all you need to do is show the child how much, how thrilled you are that they're with you, and respond to their inquiries when they ask them.
Yeah, honestly, I'm a fan of, like, when my kids ask me about death, I tell them. You know, I don't, you know, like, because, like, I heard a story once where the parents were telling the little boy that death was, that, you know, they went to sleep. And when the little boy at one point had to have a surgery done and the anesthesiologist was going to put him to sleep, he thought he was going to die.
Right. When they die, they wake up.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And
yeah.
Here's the funny part, I mean, just the irony of that. I actually had an anesthesiologist on the show once. And anesthesia is actually, they are giving you a lethal injection of something that they know they can revive you with. I never knew that. I don't know if you knew that, but I never knew that.
I've never heard it described that way, but now that you say it, it makes sense.
That's how they put you under. They put you into a state of death.
Well, there is no death because there is no death because there is no birth. It's just a dance of love from one idea to another, finding whatever we want to find and doing whatever we want to do,
and
expanding our hearts, learning new talents, enjoying the journey. And having fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and I definitely agree with the adoption as well. Because, you know, I have said, like, I have a six-year-old from another family that I work with who basically says, you know, she tells me, she's like, I called you. I wanted you to come to us. I wanted to dance with you. We've danced in other lifetimes, and I want to dance with you. I was like, you know, wow. She's like, I've known this since I was two. I was afraid to tell you. You know, she's six now. But I love it because I speak very openly with the kids. And, you know, I love it. My family's, at least, you know, the one I'm leaving and this other one who, like, I basically, you know, I'm their weekend sitter or, you know, I've just been around for, like, 6 years. Mm-hmm. They all know, you know, like, quote-unquote Goldie's, you know, I'm like a shaman. I call myself a shaman, and they're okay with that. You know what I mean? They're not. They don't look at that like it's voodoo or witchcraft or dark magic or any of that, you know, stuff. They're just okay that, you know, when Goldie comes over, she's, you know, might have feathers with her. Or, you know, she's going to take the kids out and we're going to hug trees and, you know, talk to the plants and, you know, just have conscious conversations. And,
that's,
you know,
wonderful.
The kids, it's awesome. It's awesome. I please.
I bet the kids love it, don't they?
Oh, I am hands down the favorite nanny of my 6-year-old and 10-year-old. Absolutely, they love it because I think it's part of their experience anyways. And when an adult validates that it's, you know, because everybody's like, what's real? You know, people in our science community or, you know, we think what's real has to be in the third dimension. And, you know, the easiest thing to say is, you know, love is not a tangible thing you can hold, yet we know it's real. So we have to redefine what's real because in their imaginations, I mean, my belief is they're just experiencing another dimension and it's just as real as this dimension because their ability to shapeshift and dimension hop, like we said earlier in the show, they're programmed for it. That's they're doing that with ease, and to have an adult not discredit the other experiences I think is very important for them. Like Allie, who is my 6-year-old, she was having nightmares from, like, the time she was two until she was five. And she told me when they stopped, it was, because I used to talk to her about it and go, listen, you are the light of God. Nothing can harm you. You whatever's chasing you or trying to hurt you, you turn around and let them know you're God. You know you're the light. And there's nothing they can do to you. And when it finally clicked, she said, you know, you helped me. And I was like, wow. And now the youngest one in the family I'm leaving, she's starting to have nightmares. So, you know, I've been sharing with the mom,
you can share it to a point. See, it's better when it comes from somebody who really believes there. You know, I know I'm the light of God. You know what I'm saying? I know this in my own experiences. So when I say it, there's no trepidation. I'm saying it because I know it, and I think the children can kind of sense if you know, pardon my French, if you're bullshitting them. They'll take that to heart, like you were saying earlier. You can't give peace to another person unless you have peace within yourself. And
right, and so they've just come from a place where they knew they were God, so they're being reminded of it, and they're very open to being reminded of it, much more than adults are, because they're
absolutely
a short distance of time between when they knew it for themselves.
Well, it's amazing how quickly the schools. I watched it with Anya. How, you know, she could see. Or Anya actually had she's my 6-year-old in the family I'm leaving. I won't. It doesn't matter. Anyways, when she was 2, she spontaneously healed a wrench back. I had wrenched my back. I was at her place for a week. I had a connection with Anya that I felt. Some of these kids, you know, I can feel it immediately. It's like, wow, there is a connection here, and I'm going to explore it. And I was still at the temp agency at the time. So I heard that her mom was going away for a week, and my back was wrenched, but I went, I really like this kid. I don't want her to have to deal with another nanny, so I'll go. On day 5, she picked up the letter E from a mat we were lying on. I mean, I was on the ground with a heating pad basically all week, you know, chilling with her, but, you know, not feeling too comfortable. She rubbed the E over my back for like 20 seconds. I didn't even know the healing had taken place until about 25 minutes later when I was in my car backing up out of their driveway. I turned around to see myself go through the driveway, and there was no pain. Mm-hmm. And I went, oh, my God. Now, she was 2 at the time. And I had already, like you, I had talked to her. She could see the colors. All my kids, every single kid, exactly like your book says, I have conversation. As long as they can talk, I thought, do you see the colors? Yep. She saw a dark brown around my back. And we had already we had met several conversations. Again, it was me with a 2-year-old. So these are not, you know, extended conversations. But I was like, yep, you know, I got a boo-boo, and, you know, it's hurting. And she didn't say, okay, I'm going to heal you. I was just lying there, you know, we were talking. I don't remember how it happened. I just know she rubbed this E on me, and the pain was 100% completely healed. Mm. It was miraculous. And I believe that they come in with these gifts because it's almost like she just knew how to put the energy back into its space.
Well, you're bringing now, You're bringing a lot of love into her life, so why wouldn't she be bringing love back to you? I mean, when you bring love
Thank
to
you.
Other people, your heart is open to receive love. So she only had to just play her role, and you accepted it. So
right on.
Because you were, I mean, you're spending your life loving these children. It shouldn't be any surprise that they're loving you back in their way.
Oh, no surprise, but, you know, miraculous healings, clearly. I mean, I was doing my radio show. I came on the show and went, oh, my God, I have to share this with everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, I had never experienced personally a miraculous healing. And it's so funny now, what I was kind of leading up to is now that she's 6, like I've always told my kids when they're young, if they get hurt, the words we say is, I am a field, I am healed. And I'm like, talk to yourselves. Tell them to go back into the position they were when everything felt good, when everything was right. And the older they get, Anya's like, no, I don't want to do that. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't want to do that? Why would you want the pain? And I get, this is where you come in. I can hear you going, because everything has a purpose, Goldie. Don't interfere with it. The girl who healed me at 2, at this point, I can feel, you know, she's on the journey of the forgetting. You know, she is on that journey. And I think that's partially why it's my time to leave the family.
Well,
because I'm always on the journey to heal, and she's, you know, in divinity on the journey to forget.
Well, and that's fine.
Indeed, totally. I mean,
yeah,
God knows I came from a totally forgetful space. So, indeed, you're absolutely right that that's fine. I agree.
Fine. So you just find somebody who's more compatible with you, and she'll find somebody who's more compatible with her.
Well, and it's her mom. Her mom quit her job, so you're right on. And I'm ready to go back to an infant. I mean, it's been, you know, some years that I was with this family, and it just worked out that way. And, you know, I'm also ready to do healing work. You know, I haven't done a... I used to, like, when I became a Reiki master, and I used to do a lot of energy work, hands-on work, and I would love to get into that. I have to see how it manifests, because I tried to do it once before, and I could only get people to sew and bring soup. they didn't want to pay money for the sessions. And, you know, you can't pay bills with you know, jars of soup. So, even though, how would you interpret that? I kind of like your interpretation, so that I couldn't get paid to do energy work.
Well, I think that, first of all, if you're doing the energy work, you need to do it because you love to do it.
Okay.
And you don't necessarily get paid back by the person you do it for, but you still receive the gift. So the gift
is
another form from another person. It just didn't come where you expected it to come or wanted it or thought it
right.
should come. That doesn't mean
right.
it come.
Namaste. You're absolutely right on that. And the truth is, any energy work you do, clearly, I receive the energy and then it threw me. So you're absolutely right that it did healing. I could never, because I was like, I can get paid for nannying. That didn't, but I've had other people say to me, you should try again. You know, it's a different world now than this was in 2002 that, you know, I was living on my own and, you know, trying to make a living and let go of the nannying for a bit. And, you know.
Well, I think we should always, you know, trust the support of the universe. If the universe is supporting a certain direction, then the universe feels or your soul feels that that's a productive direction. So if the universe is supporting the nannying, then for now, the nannying is really where your soul feels you're going to gain the most. If it isn't supporting the healing, it just means maybe it's not time or you have something more to learn before the healing is effective the way your soul wants it to be. And so it's just about trusting that your journey is perfect the way it is and that... where support comes from does not really matter as long as the support comes.
Well, that's a big lesson, right? Acceptance was, at least for me, that was, I really recognized what a control freak I was on a lot of things.
When I was first writing, I wasn't getting paid for the writing. I mean, I was having trouble. I didn't, you know, get a publisher right away. I wrote four books without... getting a publisher wasn't until the fifth one. And I remember feeling that, you know, well, I can't make any money in the publishing, and I wanted the money to come from the publishing. But while I was complaining about that, I was in the entertainment business as an assistant to the president of a company, and I was earning a huge salary. So,
right.
You know,
I'm bemoaning
what isn't working and not really being grateful for what is working.
Right.
Which is you know, counterproductive. So you can't always, you know, you can't demand where the universe is going to support you. You can only appreciate where the universe is supporting you.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right on. And the truth is that I any time I go through these, you know, intervals where I'm not working, I always, you know, like, because I've decided, you know, I mean, I'm dabbling with a couple of jobs, but I'm not going to work the whole month of June. I mean, I've got a couple of days left with Wani and the family, but, you know, they're dwindling down to, like, only 2 or 3 days left, and I'm going to take June off. I'm going to Wisconsin because I want to give Spirit a chance if it is going to be through something from the radio or some healing work. You know, I want to show that I don't have to just react to, I don't have a job, I must find another job, and I must find another job now. You know, I want to give Spirit a chance. But you're absolutely right that I can always fall back on, I love being with kids. You know, I can start a new chapter with a new baby or babies. a new family, and that's never a bad space for me.
As long as
I'm with kids, I'm happy.
There isn't any reason you can't do both. You can do the nannying, and then you can...
Indeed. Okay. Yes.
So,
yes, that's true. And I'm doing that. Exactly.
So that's what, you know, honoring self is all about.
So when your books took off, is that when you left corporate?
Well, no, I left corporate when I could retire. When I had financially, I could retire. That's when I quit, and said that I was ready to retire. Because I was in a job that was high pressure, and I was getting older, and not as when you get older, the pressure hits you in a different way, and you can't you aren't as sharp as you were when you were younger. And I wanted to. I didn't want to be in the pressure longer than I had to, but I worked with wonderful people. I worked for a wonderful man, and I liked his family and his children, and it was a great gift in many ways in my life. And you know, at a time when I had almost become a bag lady, and was really financially in a very bad way, and I was just beginning to hear the ideas about spirituality and doing the Course in Miracles and understanding about taking responsibility, but I hadn't really begun to live the ideas yet. And so it was when that was the time when I said to myself that I was going to start taking responsibility, and I was going to do it in every area of my life. And one of those areas was of the gift of being able to hear spirit. And so I said that I would, I wanted to use a gift, and I wanted to share the ideas that I heard, but I would need a job to support me. And 3 weeks later, I had the job and supported
me
for 18 years. It was almost as if I said to the universe said to me, well, if you're ready, we're ready, and here we go.
Wow.
So I went from having nothing to being able to retire 18 years later. So it was a huge gift in my life.
Yeah, that's hot. I love stories like that because, you know, when we have those those moments of just such clarity, you know, like one of my moments of clarity was when my dad came in and said, you know, you can't stop doing radio. It's your, you know, it's your dream. Live your dream. Don't give up. That was such a moment of clarity for me. And not because my father was supporting me. It was because I was clear that I was supporting me because I had already known my label of who my father was. My father was my subconscious. Now my subconscious is supporting me. I mean, that was just, it was a grand moment for me. And
sure. It
sounds like a grand moment, you know, when you got the job, you know, clearly, especially if you're getting close to, you know, being homeless and that kind of stuff and you had kids. I mean, that must have been, you know, a challenging time to say the least.
Well, my children weren't with me, but it was challenging nevertheless.
Yeah, well, even more so. So, you know, you want to get them back, you know, so you can have your family back. And, you know, I honor that.
Yeah.
I honor that.
I had to go through a lot of negativity in my life to find the positive, but I realized that it was exactly what I needed to go through and exactly what I needed to live to get where I needed to get and to be where I am now. And so I have a whole different view of my childhood and early years now than I did 20 years ago. And so I'm grateful for that, too.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a friend of mine back in the day. She was like, don't lead with your wounds.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't even bring up my wounds anymore. You know, like, if anything, I'm bringing up, you know, how many other cauldrons I'm jumping into, you know, like, you know, challenging situations because of how fired up I get when I can master that challenging situation.
They're what you believed would help you, and so they really are a gift. And when you come from the point of view
absolutely
that everything was a gift, it's a very energizing point of view to be from. It's not draining like the other is, and it's more self-empowering instead of being needy. You know, you're creating effect instead of being at the effect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that is a creator. That's God.
Yeah.
you know, because I mean, and it's not that I'm doing it to the fine tuning of everything. You know, I can't make the flower blossom when I walk by. I've tried.
maybe later.
I do have synchronicities. I mean, that I will say that, I say this to everybody, if you have synchronicities going in your life, at least know that you are connecting with your soul. And for me, that's what tells me. Synchronicities also come for me, numbers, number sequences, triple digit number sequences. Mm-hmm. Lately, for like the last 2 or 3 weeks, every license plate that gets in front of me, and I'll laugh because sometimes I'll be like, I'll let somebody come in front of me that I can tell is going slower than maybe I want to go. And I'm just like, okay, Goldie, you know, there's no rush because patience is also, you know, a divine state of being. And then as soon as they get in front of me, I'll look and there's triple digits in front of them. And I'm like, oh, like, but it's showing up everywhere. And, you know, credit card bills and, you know, how many friends on Facebook, you know, dialing somebody's phone number.
What is that supposed to mean? I don't know.
Well, for me, it just lets me know that I'm divinely, you know, I'm in divine space. So for me, I'm creating my, I've set the intention to, I would love it if the radio show or something, or I can do healing work, but if not, I'm open to it being a nanny, and I don't have to figure these things out from my brain. That just lets me know I'm in divine space and it's being created. That's what I've chosen to make that definition.
Right. Okay.
Because I tell people, it's, you know, Doreen Virtue has her definitions of triple digits, and then you can go to Jhumvalo Melchizedek and he'll give you a different definition. Because it's really what resonates with each person. You know, part of being a creator is choosing the definitions of what life is telling you.
Right.
You know,
right.
Yeah, that's so, you know, and it's been happening a lot for me lately, which I'm always grateful for.
Well, that's what we're here to do, to recognize the creator within us. And sounds like you're succeeding, so that's wonderful.
Oh, namaste. Thank you. It feels that you are as well. You're a lovely guest, Betsy. I really enjoy our banter. And I love that you were ready to offend me. You have no... I love that. I do, because I just love anybody that will stand in their truth, even at the risk of offending somebody. Because that is a reflection of me.
Well,
you're gorgeous. You're gorgeous. I want to make sure we give out your website again. Can you give out the website again?
It's www.betsythompson.com. www.betsythompson.com. And they can go there and they can read about the 3 books that I have out there available. Love Parent, the one we're talking about tonight, is on Kindle, and you can order it through PayPal on my website. And The Walking Through Illusion, which is on my...
Now, I did read that book. Right. That was a great book, too. Great. I really enjoyed that book, everyone. And you know... Okay, I'm just letting everybody know. I enjoyed that one. Please continue.
All right, and then they can go to... from my website, they can go to my other websites, which are my blog and Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and LinkedIn.
Are we connected on Facebook, me and you?
I don't know. And also, I just want to let people know that Love Parent is up for an introductory price of 99 cents. So this is the time.
There you go, my friends. Come on, you got great wisdom. And remember, these books are the kind of books that when you read them, they're reminders. And the more, when you're reading it, it helps you stay in your own reminder of who you are for God. I will connect with you tonight on Facebook, definitely.
Okay, great. Okay.
Yeah. And I want to ask you a question. Would you be open to coming on the show again? And I'll tell you, but this is what I'm looking for. I want to talk about you personally. I got an itch to get to know you. and I know, I'm not trying to bring you back to a space, but I know your story is deep and delicious. And if you're open to sharing it, and I know I'm putting you a bit on the spot, on the air, I don't mean to do that, I'm just being Goldie. But I would love to know the intricacies of Betsy Otter Thompson.
Sure, I'll come back again, sure.
Excellent. Excellent. Because I'm a huge fan of people sharing their personal stories. And not, you know, you heard me saying it with the callers. There's a personalness to it that I really feel deepens everything that's done from us when they know where we've come from.
Yes, I think that's true, too. Yeah.
Awesome. And I know you got a good story, girl. I know you do.
I
will definitely be in touch.
Okay.
We are going to play. Awesome.
Okay.
Awesome. All right. Next week Anthony Farmer, another first time guest who speaks to spirits and the elders. He's gonna be a fascinating show. So everybody tune in next week. Have a wonderful week, everybody. I love you all, and I love you all. There's nothing more to be said. All right. Thank you so much, Betsy. It was a pleasure speaking with
you
tonight.
Thank
you
for having me. It was delightful.
My honor. My pleasure. All right, everybody. Take care. I'm going to play the outro, and then I'll sign off. All right. Take care, everybody.
You've been experiencing Another Reality Show with Golden Hawk. Another Reality Show is live Thursdays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, or listen and be enlightened anytime that works for you. Questions or comments, email the show, goldenhawkfeather@yahoo.com. That's goldenhawkfeather@yahoo.com. Also, visit us on the web at www.anotherrealityshow.com. Remember, all you rule breakers, misfits, troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists, everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what is right with you. You see things others don't. You're hardwired to change the world. And unlike 9 out of 10 people, your mind is irrepressible and you were born to be a revolutionary. And here at Another Reality Show, we salute you. Stay amazing and keep on flying. Good night.